Well, welcome to Footnotes and Podcasts now, remarkably, Stuart, number 9.
I can scarcely believe
it. So our first series of 10 programmes is pretty close now.
Yes, it is.
And we're in a delightful place that I found recently on a drive round from Tunbridge. But I'll let you explain, Stuart. Where are we?
We are in the very attractive, soft escarpment at Merriworth, which is not far from Westmalling. Just down the road from here is the historic lantern tower of Hadlow, which is on the road to Tunbridge. So we're in a very beautiful Wealden-like place of rich soil where Mr. Boscawen, who is our guest today, has laid down roots of a wonderful vineyard. And just behind the vineyard here, there's the 18th century tower of Merriworth Church. So you couldn't have picked a better location, William. Tell us about your wine, the process and how it all happened.
Well, I moved back here from Hong Kong 6 years ago and knew that some part of my life would be involved looking after family farming interest here. When I came back, it was clear that there's a big interest in the English wine trade. And
yes.
I developed an interest in wine many years back and never thought the opportunity would arise, but when I moved back here from Hong Kong, suddenly blessed with green open space, the chance to use our land and build farm to foam product sparkling wine really jumped out, and I've started this journey. Well, we planted in May 2016, so we are 5 years in, and in that time we've had countless award-winning products, and so it's been a tremendous journey.
Yes. What amazes me is the patience that you need to grow your grapes, and yet your product is consumed in an instant. So you've got to keep up with the massive demand.
I can tell you, 5 years of my life have gone into this.
It's worth £29.
It's two pizzas you can make in 5 minutes.
Yes.
And here I am. We have worked day and night, and genuinely looking in blood, sweat and tears have gone into making this.
Yes.
And only two people have touched it from inception. So it is, and every bottle that walks out the door, that is my life in your hands.
Yes.
So
but
yes, there is a passion to it.
I always read in my history books, back in Roman times, there were vines grown in southern England. Now we have, our climate is becoming warmer, and we have vines growing all over southern England again. Is there a competition now between the different vineyards in England? Because once, I suppose, when you were all beginning, there was a camaraderie. Are you now competing, dare I ask?
I
or can't you answer that?
It's a very good question. Of course, I mean, even I feel my elbows poke out when people start talking about how wonderful their vineyard is. And you go, oh, mine's bloody good too, I don't. But I think what you have to look at is these are French champagne houses have been around for a quarter of a millennium. Yeah, this is a long game. And the English wine trade is in its absolute infancy. And whilst you have everybody say, oh, yeah, they're phoning me, I'm going to plant 35 acres. That's a hell of a lot. Do you know how many bottles of wine are going to be consumed or how you're going to sell them and all these things? And I think we're all in a curious struggle together to try and create a category that everybody understands and fully appreciates and why there's a premium to it. So, yeah, it is a small family, I suppose, of wineries, wine producers.
Right.
Yes, don't get me wrong as well. I always want my wine to be received the best.
Yes.
But that's just a pride thing.
I mean, the first piece of music that we're going to have, it was written really before we even knew about English wine. It was written back in the 1920s by the Kent composer Peter Warlock. It's a setting of a poem by John Masefield. And I just wanted to read you one of the verses. Some are fond of Spanish wine, and some are fond of French, and some will swallow tea and stuff fit only for a wench. But I'm for right Jamaica till I roll beneath the bench, says the bold, bold mate of Henry Morgan. So here's somebody who is discussing wine, but he's opting for rum. So let's go with Peter Warlock. This song is called Captain Stratton's Fancy.
Some are fond of white, and some are over dancing by the pale moonlight. But rum alone's the tipple and the heart's delight of the old bold mate of Henry Morgan. Oh, some are fond of Spanish wine, and some are fond of French, and some will swallow tea and stuff it only for a wench. But I'm for right Jamaica till I roll beneath the bench, says the old mermaid of every morgan.
Well, it's very exciting here today at the Merriworth Vineyard because William and his team are setting up for a party. We've got lovely benches here, awnings around us, and the team are busily putting together the menu for an Indian night tonight.
Yes, it's not an obvious choice.
It's not one that you synonymously go, fine sparkling wine and Indian. Come back to what I was saying earlier, this question, like, we are all in this together, and I think we have to differentiate what an English sparkling wine is to a French sparkling wine. And more importantly, my sort of raison d'etre, sorry, I do not use French words in my wines, and we don't use blanc de blanc or cuvées, but to come back to that, I think that sparkling wine should be much more approachable. Yeah. And I don't feel it's appropriate to say, oh, it's only for this special occasion and we're saving it for this. Dinner should be a special occasion. I think you should try and enjoy it as much as possible. I think that's where I'm trying to break down the barriers. There's no terminology that people can't understand on a bottle of wine. The occasion has to be as ubiquitous and as often as possible. Even if it's an Indian wine, you rarely will have a sparkling wine for a meal, you know, as an accompaniment to food, but I really feel it should be. I think sparkling wine is so versatile, so exciting, and effervesces in the mouth, it's a palate cleanser, and you've got so much body that should be incorporated into food. So there is a deliberacy to this. Also, is that Indian is very approachable and everybody knows what they're getting. I don't want to sit here and go, well, we're going to have flambé eggs and something that people can't necessarily get behind and enjoy. So that's very much...
Are you pressing for us to buy English wine at this time of change in our country? I mean, we've had the Australia trade deal. We obviously love Australia, but we want people to buy English wine, don't we? How are we going to get people to buy our English wine over EU or Australian products?
It's a very complicated answer, this. But I think you have to look at what happens in America. A cellar door can expect up to 80% of its revenue from wine tourism. People coming to that winery and enjoying the whole occasion, understanding the soil, the terroir, and the actual explanation of the process. I think that's the part I'd like to see happen in English wine, rather than just think, oh, the only place I can go and get a drop of booze is the pub. Not a bit of it. There's now 800 vineyards in the country. And
there are 800?
Yeah, more. Yeah, there's 160 plus commercial wineries. So there's every excuse to go and sit outside, to enjoy the vines and understand. That's the part I really want. I mean, I can guarantee 90% of the world doesn't realise that champagne or sparkling wine is fermentation in the bottle. It's a very complicated process which requires people to visit, to experience and understand.
Yes.
So, of course, I want people to drink English sparkling wine. In the same way, America is late to the market. Now it's got a huge amount of people following it, and there's a great thriving trade. But everything has to start somewhere.
Well, that's extremely interesting, William. And I think that as we're sort of sitting here on benches, we're in Karl Orff's tavern of the Middle Ages, and Karl Orff set the following medieval text. I'll just read you this because it's so important for where we are. Here, no one fears death, but they throw the dice in the name of Bacchus. First of all, it is to the wine merchant that the libertines drink. One for the prisoners, three for the living, and then four for all Christians. How about that? Karl Orff.
Yeah.
William, when I was passing the Merriworth Vineyard during the pandemic, you had a very good sign up here saying, "We are an essential service." Superb.
Did you?
Of course I did, yeah.
But I noticed in the converted buildings here, if we look round, we can see a sort of section of trees, and we can see a far building was what, a place where you stored carts or something like that. But next door, there's an artisan bakery. So I wonder if maybe vineyards like this could become a nucleus for a whole world of English food, English wine, English living. I mean, do you see this as a cultural battle as well as just selling wine? Is this something we can go forward into a new society post-Brexit with?
I think it's a very, very good question. It's only when I moved here into this site, it was like, well, there's a, exactly that. There's a hub, and it's still a new concept. I haven't seen too many successful models. Spitfire,
that is a Spitfire flying over, ladies and gentlemen.
It is, yeah.
We are back in 1940, and the Spitfire is guarding our wine growing region.
Which was arranged by us.
Which was arranged by us, yes.
Permanently buzzing over here, and I love it a bit, but it's just like as soon as you're saying something important, it's like, hold tight.
Oh no, there's a Spitfire.
Oh, listen to the Merlin. I think the concept of food hubs is quite tricky and precarious. Not that I really wanted to pursue it. I do have a great working relationship with my esteemed neighbour, that is Pear, who really does make some of the best bread in the world. The difficulty is, if I were to say my wine business is going to grow, it requires and consumes a heck of a lot of floor space. So actually, I'm prepared to take a longer standpoint and slowly see how my wine business can grow. And importantly, we have to take advantage of hospitality areas and events, because that's how I can trade. So much as I want to have other brands and businesses here, sometimes it's nice just to have one dog on the campus.
Right,
no,
okay.
It'll probably be me.
Excellent. Well, this podcast with William's appearance is very much a first, but William is going to choose a piece of music for us, and it's going to be, for the first time on Footnotes, a piece of non-classical music. So William, please choose.
There's a million songs I could go for, but I think something I wanted to bring into cultural significance for me was that I grew up listening to my father's records, and he was an avid follower of all things Pink Floyd and Supertramp. Those were the vinyl that I inherited, and I also really just fell in love with his old Bang & Olufsen record player, which he clearly never used and I really put through its paces. And Supertramp really stuck to me because they were the masters of the new wave of pop, and yet they were laced with quite a classical instrumental. And there is a song, Fool's Overture, which I often played, and certainly when I went to see them live in Germany when they reformed. They never played this song, regrettably, but actually Supertramp were huge in the continent, and it was quite a momentous occasion to watch my father's favourite band being adored by the Germans there, and it seemed to transcend all generations, both young people in sort of carry cots, and then there was old rockers there. I had an absolutely incredible time, and I think if I'm trying to just bring a band that I used to love and still do into a classical milieu, that would be a fit for it.
Jolly good.
History recalls how great the fall could be, while everybody's sleeping, the boats put out to sea. Born on the wings of time, it seemed the answers were so easy to find. Too late, the prophets cry. The island's sinking, let's take to the sky. Calling. us out of our sleep, my friend. We're not alone. He waits in silence. Many seeds to sow.
Had a delightful time here at the Merriworth Vineyard, but there are shadows of history all around us in Kent. William was telling us that there is a particular literary association with this very spot.
George Orwell. George Orwell came and worked here. And there is a plaque at Westmoreland saying he wrote about his time hop picking here. But what people didn't actually know was that his great-great-grandmother was the daughter of the Earl of Westmorland, who owns Merriworth Castle. He was obviously one of the great social reporters of the time, and he worked here in very hard conditions. The hop pickers back in the 30s were a hardy bunch, but none of them would have known that he was directly related to the owner of the land here. He would have been camped in one of the Nissen huts, those corrugated steel half-round houses that are now lying in the hedge there. Certainly he wrote about it in The Clergyman's Daughter.
Yes, that's a very fine novel. And one of the things that surprises me about that is usually you associate Orwell with this granite text. There's actually a pastoral feeling in The Clergyman's Daughter. His descriptions of Kent seems a bit out of character, at least when I read it, but it's a wonderful novel. Have you had any modern novelists have visited here? Apart from Richard, of course, who's written a novel.
Yes, I have. And I have bought wine here, so perhaps I qualify. No, I'm not related to the Earl of Westmoreland.
No. Maybe what we should really be trying to champion is the mecca of all things novel. Writers should be coming here.
Yes.
Drinking my wine and being inspired.
A bookshop, perhaps, William?
Well, one step at a time.
Well, look, let's end with Gustav Mahler and his wonderful Das Lied von der Erde, which he wrote in 1908 in the Tyrol. And there's a wonderful section called The Drunkard in Spring. The words are, "If life is only a dream, why then labour and worry? I drink until I can drink no more the whole blessed day."
A good finale, and we have a surprise for you for our final podcast of this series, with a bit of luck and a fair wind. Anyway, for now, from William, from Stuart, from myself, Richard Dove, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.